Good morning. As President Trump says there's progress on talks with Iran, another deal in the Middle East is on shaky ground.
What we have now is Hamas agreeing to this theoretical process, but potentially not actually having to do a lot if the Israelis never get on board.
Why Wall Street is paying big bucks for early access to the president's social media posts. And after almost a century, women's professional baseball is back. It's Monday, August 3rd. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. The White House has been involved in a flurry of diplomacy and mediation in the Middle East in recent days. Over the weekend, President Trump abruptly withdrew threats of strikes on Iran, saying once again a deal to end the war was coming into focus. This came after mediators reportedly presented Iran with a proposal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, and a number of Gulf states urged Trump to hold off on attacks and keep discussing diplomatic solutions. Trump says negotiations will resume today. Meanwhile, a different potential diplomatic breakthrough was announced last week for the war in Gaza. Trump said Hamas had agreed to disarm and give up control of Gaza.
Israel is very happy about it. Israel helped us. And they've been very good. They've been very good about it. Most said that would be a deal that would be undoable. Now, will it go through its ups and downs? It's a very complex situation over there.
Michael Birnbaum covers the White House for The Washington Post and told us this agreement, if executed, would mark a significant change in the region.
It's a big deal if this comes to pass, but he made this announcement without Hamas saying that it had agreed and without the Israeli government saying that they were on board as well.
And now the deal is already in jeopardy. On Friday, Hamas said it would agree to disarm and surrender its weapons, but only after Israel ends all forms of hostility in Gaza. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office told the Associated Press yesterday that Israel would not withdraw from Gaza before Hamas disarms. In other words, neither side trusts the other enough to make the first move.
What the U.S. negotiators have tried to achieve here is a step-by-step process by which each side does a little bit, takes turns, tries to build confidence enough to move to the next step. They acknowledge that neither side has any trust in the other, and the U.S. goal is to get them to move forward even when there isn't any trust on either side.
Under the proposed agreement, Israel and Hamas have 2 weeks to come up with a timetable and plan for Hamas to disarm and Israel to withdraw from Gaza. Hamas would surrender its weapons to a U.S.-backed Palestinian committee, and at that point, military production sites and tunnels would start to be destroyed as Israeli troops begin their withdrawal.
People who've been involved in the process, even on the other side of the U.S. political spectrum, saying that this could be a way, finally, to move Gaza back to some sort of situation where its residents can rebuild, where they can get food, water, medicine, the kinds of things that they desperately need, and where both sides might be able to live in some kind of uneasy coexistence, but something that is more stable than what we've seen since October 7th, 2023.
Beyond the current trust issues, timing could also play a role in how Israel approaches the agreement.
So the Israeli election calendar is a major factor in what happens in the short run in Israel.
Netanyahu is up for re-election in October. So Birnbaum says it's unlikely that Israel offers any real concessions before then.
Netanyahu doesn't have a lot of political space within his coalition to make what could be portrayed as concessions to the Palestinians. That could change. Either we'll have a new Israeli leader in a few months who might be willing at least to have a different style and tone toward the situation, or he might be able to make some moves after he's faced Israeli voters. But things do feel kind of on hold for the time being, given the uncertainty about where Israeli politics are going.
Polls show that Israeli voters, despite largely supporting the war with Hamas, have very low trust in Netanyahu. If you want to be the first to see the president's latest post on Truth Social, you can get special early access at a hefty price. As of this weekend, banks and other Wall Street investment firms can pay up to $100,000 a month for a premium version of the president's social media platform. It's called Truth API, and it gives traders early access to posts by Trump and other high-profile accounts before other users. At least five firms have already signed up, according to Wall Street Journal reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Because getting a jump on Trump's posts by even nanoseconds can make a big difference in the money traders can make, since his messages often move markets.
Often you see huge moves in the milliseconds after Trump has posted.
Like his post about the war in Iran. When he said in June that the U.S. would retaliate after Iran shot down a U.S. helicopter, trading in energy stocks rose almost immediately.
And what normal people saw after that was, you know, the share prices of oil companies jumped up because all of a sudden it seemed like there was going to be prolonged conflict, and so oil prices rose. But even within that, if you look at individual oil companies and trading data, we found that there was a huge surge in trading of contracts in the 1, 2, 3 seconds after that. And so even just in the first second, you see a huge boost in trading because those milliseconds matter. And that's what companies are looking to get in on.
Many investment firms already have systems in place to watch the president's posts and to trade accordingly. So Ostroff says Truth API would allow them to take their monitoring to the next level.
Anywhere that institutional investors think they can get an edge, they're looking for it. Because these really small nanoseconds do matter and can make the difference between whether they can make a big profit quickly or whether they take a loss.
But the service has gotten criticism in Washington and on Wall Street over concerns about insider trading, and because Trump now stands to make money off of policy announcements. Recent government disclosures show that he has brought in a record-breaking profit during his second term, earning over $2 billion last year alone. And Trump is a major stakeholder in the parent company of Truth Social, so he could benefit from signups for Truth API.
We have not had a sitting president whose company he is a shareholder of try and make money off of prioritizing access to his posts for a subset of people. I think in the past, with most administrations, access to information has essentially been equal for most of the general public.
Several Republican senators have criticized the service as well. Susan Collins said it, quote, does not sound appropriate. Lisa Murkowski called it, quote, wild. Two Democrats, Senators Elizabeth Warren and Adam Schiff, have asked the SEC to investigate if the service violates securities law. And NPR also spoke with several former lawyers for the SEC who said Truth API does appear to violate insider trading laws against misusing non-public information to give certain investors an upper hand. A spokesperson for the Trump media company that runs Truth Social, meanwhile, said the service aims to offer customers faster access to publicly available information. And in other statements, the company has said that Democratic critics are exhibiting a kind of, quote, opposition to free markets. After tens of thousands of migrants swam from Morocco to a small Spanish enclave at the tip of North Africa last week, there have been a lot of questions about what drove them to make the journey, and a lot of hand-wringing over immigration policy in Spain and the rest of Europe. Roughly 60,000 people rushed into Ceuta, a Spanish territory near the Strait of Gibraltar, late last week. Those who swam were in the water for hours, with many collapsing from exhaustion when they arrived. At least 72 people died, according to Spanish authorities. The migrants left the small city of around 84,000 people almost as quickly as they got there, in part because Spain mobilized its military, and the migrants received a pretty frigid welcome from locals.
Shops, supermarkets, restaurants closed and refused to serve them or sell them anything to eat, which means it doesn't take long for them to get the message that actually this is not a place where they are welcome.
Victoria Valdezzi is a political correspondent for Reuters in Madrid who spoke to us about the fallout.
There are now scenes of just debris on the beaches of Ceuta, life vests, inflatable boys. It's quite clear that the exodus was swift.
Why so many people made the difficult journey is not totally clear. Authorities in Ceuta and Spain have pointed to a Supreme Court ruling from the end of June, in which Spain's High Court ruled that migrants arriving by sea cannot be summarily rejected at the border.
That ruling spread on social media and, according to the Spanish government, was manipulated in order to make it sound as though the border was quite simply open. Many, many people saw that and thought, now is my chance.
Some people told news outlets they were seeking job opportunities and better lives in Europe. This is how one man explained his decision to leave Morocco for the Associated Press.
actually, there is no chance to live there. So that's why I spend 14 years for studying, but nothing. Just sitting in your home or working for 12 hours for a less salary. So that's why I come in to here.
Other people Valdezzi spoke to said they didn't hear about the Supreme Court ruling, but they instead saw videos and messages from other migrants who succeeded in getting into Ceuta last week. So they decided to try it for themselves. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez condemned the rush of migrants as a violation of Spain's territory. He's built a 500-meter floating barrier aimed at preventing future crossings. But his political opponents have seized on the event to criticize his immigration policies. Under Sanchez, Spain has been more open to immigration lately compared to other European countries.
The Spanish government has recently provided a pathway to legal status for undocumented migrants in Spain.
But Valdezzi said that program has been closed since the end of June. Plus,
in order to qualify for that, you had to already have lived in Spain for a minimum of 5 months and to be able to prove that. So these people would never have been able to get status in that way. It's you know, entirely unconnected. But of course, it was an opportunity for opponents of that policy to raise it and say that it was encouraging migrants to try and make their way into Spain.
The backlash has extended beyond Spain as well. President Trump has criticized Sanchez. Italy's prime minister said they would reimpose border controls for travelers coming from Spain. And France's interior minister said they would strengthen border checks.
There was a certain level here where I think European governments wanted to show strength and to assure their populace that none of these people were going to reach them. Spain reacted to those European allies with some disappointment. They said this was a moment for solidarity and not for spreading misinformation or implying that any of these people were going to make it to the European continent.
The EU plans to hold a meeting tomorrow to discuss the incident and immigration policy on the continent. Here are a few other stories we're following today. And a quick warning, the first one includes descriptions of alleged domestic abuse. A senator is calling on a House member from his own party to resign as a bitter family dispute spills into public view. Republican Congressman Max Miller has for years been involved in a legal battle with his ex-wife, Emily Marino, the daughter of Republican Senator Bernie Marino. Both of them represent Ohio. Emily Marino has accused Miller of domestic abuse, including throwing scalding water on her and holding a gun to her head. And she says Miller hurt their 2-year-old daughter. She filed for a new restraining order against Miller on Thursday, and Senator Marino has called Miller increasingly erratic and dangerous. Miller has sued his ex-wife for defamation, and he released a video on Sunday denying the allegations. The dispute is putting his fairly safe seat at risk as Marino pressures him to step down. But Miller says that he is not planning to step away from his re-election campaign. Things have gone from bad to worse for FIFA president Gianni Infantino over the last few days. He quickly abandoned a plan to sell World Cup profits to private equity on Friday after widespread backlash, including from European teams threatening to abandon the next World Cup. Infantino said that the plan had created a level of division that threatened the objective of the project in the first place. Now a number of global soccer bodies are mobilizing to attempt to end his decade-long tenure as president. To be removed from his position, 1/5 of FIFA's member nations would have to trigger a vote of no confidence, and also come up with a replacement. And finally, the Women's Pro Baseball League made its debut over the weekend, bringing women back to the diamond on a professional level for the first time in more than 70 years.
Next pitch, that's a tapper. It'll be tough as Lansdale races, throws to first in time. And that'll do it. Here in the inaugural season, very first game, season opener.
That's the moment the Los Angeles Queens capped off a huge comeback win against the New York Heights at the league's inaugural game. The Queens were down by as much as 4 runs at one point, but slowly rallied back to notch the team and the league's first ever win. Creators of the league and players said this is a huge opportunity to play a game they love, but where no real opportunities had existed professionally. About 4,000 people showed up to watch the first game, including 99-year-old Maybelle Blair, who threw out the first pitch. She played in the Women's League back in the 40s that inspired the hit film A League of Their Own. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next from Wired. A high school senior from California searched the Epstein files for connections to his community for a journalism class. What he found led to a lawsuit and a huge debate over free speech. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.